is that other book. But Ecclesiastes chapter 7, we touched base on a few of these verses last week in our lesson. We're going to review them just briefly here. We see the goldfish in the bowl, and we see the words that this meaning to life in this world. Years ago, when we were living in Folsom, we had decided that Clinton needed a pet, and so we went down to the store and we bought ourselves a goldfish, and we brought it home, and we had it in a bowl, and it lived there for a while, and then it died. And so we decided, you know, the water was too hot, and maybe we fed it too much, and so we went down and got another goldfish, and we spent time to give it just the right amount of food. And I remember taking the goldfish bowl and putting it in the refrigerator, keep the water cold, and then bring it out. And so we were pretty excited. I think it had been 2 days, and our goldfish was still alive. And I believe it was a Friday night, and we were playing the card game Nerds, and we decided to get the goldfish out of the refrigerator, take him on a walk. So we brought the goldfish out, and we set it between us, and we said, you know, this is great. The goldfish has lived 2 days, and we both looked at each other, and we looked at the goldfish, and the goldfish went boop and died right there. I think that was the last time we had goldfish, okay? Pretty meaningless life for that goldfish. He maybe saw outside the refrigerator a little bit in the time that he was with us, and that's sometimes how life feels like. It just seems like meaningless. And so we've talked about in Ecclesiastes this idea this world isn't our home. It's not some place that we have any lasting experience with. And so we have these words, vanity and vexation of spirit. And we've talked about those particular words and what they mean. This transitory life, meaningless life, and what's it all about? There's nothing that specifically is held within this world that God has put us on that has anything that's going to last. We can't hold on to it. We can't take it with us. There's nothing that's here. And so we have these ideas are brought forth in the book of Ecclesiastes. And then the other thing is this idea of folly. So this idea of things that are folly or foolishness, things which are a deviation in mind from things that are true, good, right, wise, and prudent. And so oftentimes the writer is describing man as being a fool or the foolish things of this existence. And so we can raise our hands, I think, on many occasions when he describes things and say, I've played the part of a fool. And he said, don't be a fool when you're living on this world. Don't be foolish in the things that you do. Be wise. Have some wisdom. And God had given Solomon wisdom to explore all kinds of things, everything that he explored. So he was looking for us. And so we can be wise in taking some lessons from what he's learned. And if we find ourselves being foolish, then we need to stop doing that. Because God's given us all these things that are transitory and unfulfilling on this earth to drive us to an understanding that God is in control. God is where the answer is. He is the one who has given us this folly and this toil to keep us humble, okay, to exercise us, to strengthen us through struggles so that we can be better. And so if you noticed last week when we touched base in the starting of chapter 7, and sprinkling through a couple chapters before that, you see these little glimpses of things that we should do. And so the word that started to be used here in chapter 7 was this idea of better. There's something better for you to do. So here, when you're on this this rock, the third rock from the sun, so to speak, there are things that maybe you should be doing to make yourself better in this existence. In the times of toil and struggle, he said a number of times, it's good for man to just labor and enjoy what he can. Just when you have good times, enjoy them. Enjoy the things that are of this world that you can enjoy, and then just deal with the things that are struggles. So he talks about better, this gain or profit. Excuse me, it's better for man to do these things. So real quickly, and just kind of a review of the first part of this chapter, we see here in chapter 7 and verse 1, he talks about a good name. He said, a good name is better. It is profitable for you than the day of death, than a precious ointment, okay, something that could be lost, and then the day of one's death better than the day of one's birth. This idea of better to go to the house of mourning, we talked about this idea of mourning provides us with some benefit, So we don't often think of it that way, but mourning is better than this house of feasting. For that is the end of all men, and the living will lay it to his heart. So the living are going to, in the house of mourning, going to be pondering the fact that life is short, death is something that comes to all of us, and so we can learn from that. Sorrow is better than laughter. The heart is made better because of that. Verse 4, the heart of the wise in the house of mourning, but the heart of the fools in the house of mirth. So if you're going to live in the only area of mirth and laughter and good times, you're not going to be better off. You're going to be better off to be mindful of this area of mourning. It's better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the songs of fools. You know, we as parents try to instruct our children in things that are wise. We as children hopefully heard from our parents things that were wise. And so it was better for us to hear wisdom than that, the song of fools. It talks about the song of fools being like thorns under a pot. And the pot, the soup's not going to get warm if you have thorns as your wood, okay? It's not going to be very warm. And so the song of fool is this idea of vanity. Surely oppression maketh the wise man mad, and a gift destroyeth the heart. So this idea of if you're wise, you don't want to do foolish things. You don't want to be oppressive in your wisdom. You don't want to be take bribes, if you will. It's not wise to do that. It says here, it's better is the end of the thing than the beginning thereof, and the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. We talked about what that means a little bit. Be not hasty in this spirit to be angry, for angry resideth in the bosom of fools. So here, as we describe these ideas of things that are better in our lives, the idea is that when you're living on this world, here's some things that are practical in nature that we can do. So if we talked about the book of Ecclesiastes being kind of a downer, you know, this oppression, this vanity, transitory things, when you start to really look at it, you see some sunshine coming through. Because he's saying, listen, in spite of all of that, here's some things you ought to do. Here's some things you can do to make your life here on this earth, in the midst of all this calamity that's here, better. And so he gives us some examples of what that looks like. So we are cast, and we're not going to spend a time to go over into the New Testament and necessarily look at all the verses that verify this, if you will, because we're looking at Solomon and his wisdom here as he's looking at the results and what you should be living on this earth, but they're there. So we see this idea of anger, okay? So be not hasty in spirit to be angry, for anger resideth in the bosom or in the mind, the essence of a person. And he's saying that's not what you want to be. And we can say that we've had times where we've been hasty to anger, and we may have anger in our own lives, angry about something that's happened, and basically what has he said? He says, you're a fool. So we can all raise our hand and say, I've done that. I've either been hasty in my spirit or I have anger in my soul. And so there you go. You're a fool. I'm a fool. We're all a fool. Everyone who's been here has been a fool. Everybody's played the part of a fool. Don't do that. So that's where he starts off. So we talked about those briefly the other day. So let's have you read this. If you can read it, it's kind of a smaller font. Does anybody recognize this? Yeah, where's Sharon? Sharon Runner in here? Yeah, I was counting on Sharon Runner to read this. Okay, so this is part of a song from the group Chicago back in the 80s. And it talks about old days. And the author is going to talk a little bit here about old days, you know, about what we should do about old days. And these old days were good. They were exciting. They were a place I wanted to be. Well, in verse 10, he talks about, well, I'll just read this. So old days, good times I remember, fun days filled with ships of pleasure, drive-in movies, comic books and blue jeans, howdy doody, baseball cards and birthdays. Take me back to the world gone away. Memories seem like yesterday, oh, old days. We've all said that. We've all said, hey, I want to know about my old days. There was a time when it was better. I remember my grandma saying, boy, there was a time when it was better. 1900 was better than today. And we may say, well, 1960 was better than today, or 1980 was better today, or whatever day you may say is better. So here we see that in verse 10, he says, say not thou, what is the cause that the former days were better than these? So, as we see about our instruction, he said, don't do that. Well, we've all said that. We've all thought that. Now Sharon comes into the room. I was counting on you, Sharon. You weren't here. So, anyway, we've all said this. We've all looked at a historical view about the old days. Now, this is Solomon writing, and he's saying, you know, he's looked at all these things. He says, the old days, don't talk about the old days. They're not better. We might think, well, you know, it must have been better, you know, 1,800 years before Christ came. It must have been a better world, right? And Solomon's saying it wasn't there. So is this from a historical point of view or from a personal point of view? From a personal point of view, what might be there? This personal life of now, it might be in place. So he says, for thou dost not inquire wisely concerning this. What is the thought that he would have here about this? So this idea is this complaining he's going to talk about. If you're a complainer, you're saying, you know, today just doesn't have anything for me, but I remember back when I was 15. Now, that was when it was great. Well, that may be true. I didn't have as many worries as I had when I was 15 than I have now, maybe. But the situation in the plight of man was all the same. There wasn't anything that was any different. Death still reigned when I was 15. You know, I had friends who died when I was 15. Maybe you did too. It wasn't pleasant. There was nothing better about that necessarily than in time. So when we look at the whole of humanity, there's no better time where death and struggles and trials didn't exist. There was no utopia time. We may say, well, way back in the garden, but we're going to say that that was a different time, right? Okay. So, wisdom is good with an inheritance. If you are going to have something to inherit, if you could pass down something, and he's brought this up several times, I don't know if with all the wealth that I have, Solomon speaking, if I have all the wealth and I pass it on, I don't know that my son is going to be wise enough to handle it right. But if you can inherit wisdom, wisdom is something you can deal with. You can pass on wisdom. Can you instruct someone or have instruction that gives you a benefit? So he says wisdom is an inheritance. And by it is there is profit to them that see the sun. So if you have wisdom and you live on this earth that is not, has no extended value to it, but if you have wisdom and you're living here on this earth in those conditions, you have something. It's a value to you. And so the things that you have for wisdom or you can pass on wisdom, that's going to be a good inheritance. What do those things look like? Excuse me. For wisdom is a defense and money is a defense. This idea is a protection or a shield, a covering. So it may cover you in some way. So money can cover me in some way. It can give me some advantages. But he says, okay, but then what? There's wisdom and money. They both have some advantages. But the excellency of knowledge is that wisdom giveth life to them that have it. So the life that we can have on this earth, the joy that we can find in this earth, the joy that we can find on living on this earth and going beyond this earth is found in wisdom. It's not going to be found in money and or riches that someone may possess. So he says, consider the works of God. Do you sit sometimes and just ponder, consider what God has done? Spiritually, physically, have you just thought about it? What has he done? Maybe you've watched a documentary or you've sat on the Oregon coast and looked at the ocean, looked at the mountains, and you see all that he's done. So you've considered what God has done. For no one can make that straight which he has made crooked. So, we would like all things to be straight, to the point, an easy road, easy to understand, no complications. That's what we'd like. Make it simple. You know, maybe we're a cook and we like, I think my mom's, if there's five ingredients in it, she'll cook it. If there's six, she's not going to deal with it, right? Straight. Simple patterns. We want condensed versions of things. We read books that are condensed. But God's made things that are crooked. Why did he do that? Why did he make things so complicated? Why isn't it easier for me to understand? Why are things difficult? Why are there diseases? Why do we have troubles? So he said, okay, consider what God's done, and you cannot change, let's put this, what God has put in place. God put it in place. It's called crooked to me, but you can't change it. You're not going to change it. He's made it that way. He did it for us. The profit that we have is in the way he's done it. So we have in the day of prosperity, be joyful. So here's part of this crooked part of life. There's going to be times when there's money in your checkbook, let's put it, or your checking account, and then there's going to be times when there's not. So, prosperity, be joyful. In the day of adversity, consider. Okay? Consider what? God has also set the one over against the other. Okay? So he's put prosperity and diversity, and he's put them both there, and they're against each other. When they're fighting each other, like this. And you're in the middle. It's kind of like the law of averages. Getting both of those. So God's put it there. And so have you ever had this happen? Maybe you had something like this happen. You get a bonus check. Something happened, you're at work, and you got an extra bonus check for some reason. And then you come home and say, honey, I got a bonus check. And she says, yeah, the car engine just blew up. I can, how many times that happened? Maybe many times. Everybody's laughing because you've been there, right? Okay? There it is. It's against each other, right? But God put them both there. So you say, thank you, God, for giving me the bonus check. Let's figure out how to fix the car, right? There you go. It's the law of averages. And so you get to a point where you go, okay, the bonus check is here. What's going on next? You know, is the refrigerator going out? Or maybe it's the other way. Maybe you've had that happen. Something happens. You know, the refrigerator blew up and whatever, and then all of a sudden God provided something and it's taken care of, right? So it can go both ways, right? So, against the other, to the end that man should not find nothing after him. So, there's nothing man can do about that. It's just the way it is. You can't control it. You can't, there's almost, you don't want to lose sleep over it. God's in control. God's put it in place. Things are going to happen. So he says, all things have I seen in the days of my vanity. So again, back to Solomon, he's going to talk about this a little bit later, how he methodically has gone through and tried everything and looked at everything. So he's looked at all things he's seen in David Vanny. And there is a just man that perished in his righteousness. So can you imagine, Solomon's the king. He's seen a lot of things that are coming maybe across his desk, if you will. He knows a lot about what's happening in the world, and he sees those things. And he sees this situation where there is a just man, a righteous man, who perishes, and he's righteous. There's no reason he should die. Untimely death, we may say, he dies. And, people go, well, this isn't right. I mean, the question would be, where's God, right? You hear that all the time. Where's God when people who are just and righteous are died? And there's no reason they should. Back to the point we just said. Things are crooked. God made them that way. There's good and evil. They're against, adversity and goodness come together, and there's a fight. It's a struggle. And then, of course, there's this one. And then there's the wicked man that prolongs his days in his wickedness, right? Anybody, here, God, maybe you got it wrong. This guy is righteous. He should live. Why don't you take that guy? get him out of here. So what do? We say, well, we go back to the other verse. God has put everything in place. It's crooked to me, but I can't straighten it. But I'm not in control either. So this is here in verse 16. Be not righteous over much. So he's looking to us as individuals, and he said, okay, now, what he just said here kind of ties into that. Now you look at it and you say, well, maybe God's got it mixed up. Maybe he doesn't quite got it. So I'm going to try to take care of it. So here's this idea of righteous. So be not righteous over much. Don't be an extremist towards the thing that you think are righteous, is what he's trying to describe. Fanatical, proud, unloving, void of humble faith is the idea that they're trying to get across here. Be not righteous over much. So don't try to set yourself up as being the authority in what's right or not. Back to that other thing. Righteous guy dies, shouldn't have God. Here's a guy over here is wicked. He should have died. It's not my place. I can't set myself up. And he's saying, don't you set yourself up to say that you can change that. He was king. Solomon was king of his country. You know what? He didn't necessarily go out and kill all these people that he thought were wicked because he was going to be righteous, did he? Yes, he could have tried. Neither make thyself overwise. So don't try to make yourself the, again, this idea of make yourself the center of wisdom. You don't have any right to that. Or this idea of being self-sufficient. Back to this thing, you can't make yourself wise enough to do that. Why should thou destroy thyself? So if you put yourself in that position, what you're doing is you're in a position of challenging God for his control. I'm going to make the crooked things that you made wrong straight. I'm going to fix it. He said, why do you want to destroy yourself for that? Solomon was wise and he knew he couldn't fix it. He couldn't straighten it. He went down that road, I'm sure, and he said, how can I fix the things that are crooked? I can't do it. So don't you. So then the opposite of this, then in verse 17, is this idea of wicked. So what about, why don't you just be wicked? Well, he said, no, don't be wicked. We know we're not to be wicked, but don't be overly much wicked. So going the way of wickedness isn't going to help you. Remember the wicked guy who prospered? He lived, but even his wickedness? No. That would be there. Neither be thou foolish, right? Now here's our word fool. Devoid of truth, anything that's right. No, because what's the outcome of that then? If you notice this, it's going to be just like here in verse 16. Thou shouldst die before thy time. this idea of challenging yourself. You're already dead. If you're down that path, you're spiritually dead already. Just like the one who was going to set himself up righteously and somehow straighten the path that God must have left crooked. So he's saying, you people, us, you got to kind of, you can't be, you know, either one of those two things. Right? So to the point of being, you might say moderate in some of that. He said, and now it is good that you should take hold of this. So, when we say, you know, grab onto this, what do you see? You see somebody grabs hold of something, right? They hold on to it, and you hold on tight. You know, hold on to something, he's saying here, I want you to hold on to what I'm going to tell you. That means grab a hold of it, not physically, but mentally, you might say. Hold on to what I'm going to tell you. It's important. Yea, also from this, withdraw not thy hand. So, he said, I want you to hold on to it, and I don't want you to let go of it. Don't let go of this thing I'm going to say. So he said it twice. Usually when things are said twice, that means what? All you mothers know, when you say it twice, or some of you may say, I don't want to have to say it twice, right? You better be listening. Pay attention. For he that feareth God shall come fourth of them all. So in all of the scenarios that we place, what is the most important thing that's going to happen is that the person who fears God is going to come out of it ahead of everybody else. So he said, you out there that are listening to me, you're going to have to fear God. You're going to have to understand the things he made are crooked because he made them. And you're just going to have to live with it. You're going to have to fear him because he's in control. So hold on to that fact. You need to fear God. Hold on to it once. Hold on to it twice. Stay with it. So he says, wisdom strengthens the wise. More than 10 mighty men which are in the city. So you think about that. You've got wisdom. You've got these 10 mighty men. And they are able, they're in a city, so they have defensive walls. They have cannons, or I don't know if they had cannons. I guess they didn't have cannons in. They had slingshots, and they had those arrows. They had arrows, and they had, what was that? I'm thinking about crossbows. That's what I was thinking about. That was the weapon, crossbows. And so you came against a city, and they had 10 valiant men. We remember the story of, you know, Saul had killed his thousands, and David had killed his 10,000s, okay? So they were the mighty men. They were of great value. So, but he says, wisdom is strengthens the wise more than all those men that could be there. You could be mightier than 10 men defending a city if you're wise. Stronger than 10 men. So he says, be that way. For there is not a just man upon the earth. So, in and of itself, there is not a just man upon the earth. There is not one person on this earth, a just person upon this earth, that doeth good. So, back to the thought about who we are as people. Can someone stand up and say, I'm a just man, I doeth good, and sinneth not? There's only been one person who's been here that we know of at the time of this writing. There wasn't, right? There was no one who could say this. No one here can say it. No one then could say it. No one could say that they were a just man living upon the earth who hadn't sinned. So what does that put you in, this relationship that we talked about here about fearing God? You better fear God because you have nowhere to stand. You have nowhere to stand before God. So you better fear Him. Be ready. Also, take no heed unto all the words that are spoken. This is a very interesting verse because all these are very practical, but I think this is a very practical one for us. Not that all the others aren't either, but you're thinking about this. So he says, now you want to take no heed unto all the words that are spoken. We are very mindful of the words that are spoken around us. We see it in the words physically spoken. We see it in text. We see it in emails and Facebook and wherever else we communicate with one another. And this is what he wants us to be mindful of this. Lest thou hear thy servants curse thee. So, we've probably all experienced, so who's my servant? Well, I don't have servants. I have acquaintances, I have friends, I have family. And there are things that, when I think about this, that people that are fit in that group have said, or I've thought they've said, or I've thought they've heard, because I've taken heed into the words, and I've interpreted the words, and the words have come out wrong. Whether they were intended wrong or not, I know that I have chosen to take words, let's just put it this way, out of context. Back to previous verse in verse 10 where we talked about the idea of taking anger and put it into your belly. It comes because of these words, right? And we can, if you can't raise your hand, I could raise your hand for you because we are all in the same game and we have all played this game. Okay? So he says, your servant, you're going to hear your servant curse you. You sure you heard your servant curse you? say something bad about you, imply something bad about you. And he's saying, take no heed of all the words that you hear because they're not going to do you any good. And he's going to tell us, okay, you think that that's the case, but let's look here. For oftentimes also thy own heart knoweth. We know for sure ourselves that thou hast likewise has cursed others. You have said something, I have said something that has been hurtful, that has been not good, that we've said. There you go. We have. So he said, when you're taking the words that you think someone else has said, you better be thinking about yourself because you have done it yourself. Don't take any heed of that. Maybe you need to treat those words differently. Now, Solomon knew this because I'm sure he had heard his people curse him. But he also knew it because he knew he had done the same thing, even being wise, he had done it. And he said, don't do this. Here's your practical view. If you want to live on this earth and you want to be the best you can be, he says, this is something you need to not do. And since the beginning of time, it's been this way. And we're all guilty of it. We need to be mindful of it. He said, all this I have proved with wisdom. He said, I proved it. That means he's forged it. He's worked on it. He's beat it with a hammer. He's turned it over. He's verified it to be. And I said, I will be wise. He said, I'm going to be wise in what I do. I'm going to seek out wisdom. But it is far from me. He said, even God giving me the wisdom of this world and understanding all that I understand, it is still so far from me. It's a big task. It's a monumental thing to be wise. And we realize that we as humans can't be wise. There's only one who knows it all. And who's that? It's God. So we need to fear Him because He is the essence of wisdom. He is the author of wisdom. He is the author of everything. It's God Himself. He says, that which is far off is exceedingly deep. Who can find it out? There's no man who can find it out. The wisdom of knowledge, of understanding, all that's in the crookedness, why things are crooked, why things are straight, why someone lives and someone dies, why we're here on this, you know, all the struggles, why the turmoil. He says, who can find it out? No one here can find it out. You're not going to find somebody who's going to do it, and it's not going to be me. Solomon says, it can't be. I would try. I tried, and I can't find it. The hole's too deep. It's too wide. It's too complicated. It's greater than me. So don't look to me for it. I can get you somewhere there, he's saying, but I can't get you the whole way. So be mindful of that. So I applied my heart to know and to search and to seek and to reason about things and to know the wickedness of folly. So he did all these things. Here's what I did. I went and I did all these things. I told you before. I'm telling you again. I've searched these things. I've looked at them all. Even the foolishness of madness. He's even explored the madness of things. He said, I find more bitter than death something. Excuse me. So he finds something that is bitter, more bitter than the idea of death and folly and having nothing. He says, a woman whose heart is snares and nets and her hands are as bands. So we know that Solomon had 300 wives and 700 concubines. So he had a lot of women in his life, we might say that. But he's also talking about this idea of evil that's part of that. Not necessarily that women are evil, but that there's these snares that are in place in relationships that are placed. And he's experienced it. Okay? Whose pleaseth God shall escape her. So she is void of wanting God's concern, void of spiritual awareness. She's not there. But the sinners shall be taken by her. So you will be lost in that type of relationship. Someone who is void of what's important to God, someone who is going to tie your hands, whose actions are like a net, like being caught like a fish in the sea, you're going to be lost. And so we look at Solomon's life and we say, well, he experienced some of that, didn't he? He saw that also in others that part of this world. He says, "But behold, this I have found, saith the preacher, counting one by one to find out the account." So this idea of one by one, as he went methodically, one by one, one after another, the next thing in proceeding, what's the next thing in order? He was very methodic. He wasn't jumping all over the board on this. He went through life, he went through situations, one thing at a time, looking at them very carefully. "Which yet my soul seeketh, but I find not one man among a thousand have I found." So he's looking for somebody. Now this idea of man here in this verse is humankind. So the human, men, women, he said, "I'm looking for somebody in this thousand." And the thousand isn't necessarily a thousand, although it was interesting that he had about a thousand concubines, between concubines and wives. But anyway, it's a number that means a bunch. He went in a bunch. And I haven't found one person that's something. He's seeking, he can't find. He's looking for somebody. "But a woman among all these have I found not." So then he talks very specifically to the female gender, and he says, even within among females I've found all these. I guess back to, I've gone back here. So the idea of what he's looking for is someone who is just and upright, is what he's looking for. "Lo, this I have found, that God had made men upright." So God made men upright, but for some reason, when you look at a majority of people, they are not upright. They are not doing what God wants them to do. They're not choosing the right path. That's what he's looking for. So it's hard to find someone who is following specifically what God's after in this world. And the challenge is then for us to do that. "But they have sought out many inventions." So man, in his quest on this in this world, has found out different intents, different strategies. He's involved in different things that have kept him away from God. But God wants him to be doing the right things. But man has chosen, sought out many different things. All right, we've got just a couple minutes. Anybody have some comments or questions or observations about this part of Ecclesiastes 7? Everybody got it. Everybody's pumped up now, right? We got a better way now, right? Ecclesiastes is moving along. All right. Well, see none then. We'll go ahead for the next week. We'll be looking at chapter 8. Appreciate your attention and observations today. Thank you.